Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. This is Raymond Thomas, your host of the Ponks Pop Show. You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas. We are the voice of Richland College. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of anyone at KDUX, Richland College, or the DCCD. Today I have really two segments to the show. The first will be discussing what's happening in Washington, D.C. I like to refer to the so-called budget battles. It's kind of, I don't think it's much of a battle. It's more theater than anything else. And I'll tell you why in a minute or two. And the second segment, and I do this every month, especially given the high rates of unemployment, is what's happening in terms of the unemployment report by the Department of Labor Bureau of Labor Statistics came out last Friday, as it does every month. And this month we had some good news. I don't think terrific news, but at least some positive news in terms of the number of jobs being created. And in case you hadn't been listening, the Bureau of Labor Statistics reported, they do surveys every month, two types of surveys, both household and business surveys, reported that they estimated that in last month, February, 192,000 jobs were created. And that is good news, because we're not losing jobs, nor are we producing at an anemic rate of, 30, 40, or 50,000. We're starting to get at least closer to 200,000. And if you've been listening to my previous shows, you need about 300,000 jobs every month to reduce the unemployment rate by 0.1%. So the unemployment rate last month went down from 9 to 8.9%. That's just the highlights. I'm going to go into that in more detail, but those are the two segments I'm going to hit today, and they're really connected. I was looking during today's lunch in preparation of the show. I was eating, a sandwich, my peanut butter sandwich. I like peanut butter. And I was reading the school newspaper that this issue was dedicated to what's happening at the Dallas Community College District Board of Directors, or whatever they call it, trustees. And like most entities, whether they're in the private sector, whether it's colleges or businesses, as a result of the continuing recession of the economy, they have to cut their budget. And last Tuesday, this show was preempted. That's why we went on the air Thursday instead of Tuesday. We were picking up live feeds from what was happening at the board and broadcasting them over the air. That's why I wasn't here Tuesday. But this show is normally broadcast Tuesdays from 4 to 5. Every week. It's an hour show, and it's on current events. It's the Prompt Pop Show. And I also have a website. I always like to point this out, because if you are listening right now and are in front of a computer, I urge you to, as a matter of fact, you almost have to be, because this is broadcasting live over the internet. It doesn't go over the air. This is an internet streamed, if you will, talk radio show, but it deals with current events. What's in the news? What are people talking about? And my opinion or commentary on those events. And it's what I'm interested in. For example, last week I spent probably more time than I wanted to, but I'm glad I did it, on the death of Duke Snyder and he being the last of the Brooklyn Dodgers. I'm not going to go over that today, except to kind of point out there will be a memorial service for Duke Snyder on March 12th. And hopefully I'll have some additional video to supplement that past show for those that are interested in the Brooklyn Dodgers. I'm sure there are a few fans out there that may be listening. But I normally don't do sports. I do topics that I'm interested in are mainly economics, business, what's happening in the economy, education, art, music, although I don't do live music in the show. So it's topics that are interesting to me, that are current, that are in the news, and people are talking about, and you'll be talking about it. And usually there are on the topics that I tend to cover, also covered on other talk shows. And I do listen to a lot of talk radio because I'm trying to break into talk radio and like to see the different styles that the broadcasters have. And everyone does have their own style. I know I have my own style. We're rather somewhat, I won't say unique for a college radio station, but we're not equipped to take in callers. So although it's talk radio and the talk radio format, most of the national syndicated broadcasters do take calls, some more than others. We're not in a position to do that. And you really need a large base to do that. Otherwise, if you're relying on callers to call in, you're going to have a lot of dead air unless you've come loaded with material. And that's what I try to do. I try to review a lot of information, kind of boil it down and synthesize it. So that's what we're about. We're a current event show. And what's really getting the attention on the national scene, more in Washington than anywhere else, is the right now Congress, the House of Representatives, you know, they have various committees, but the key thing being well, there are really three issues being discussed. One is with the what's called continuing resolutions. The last Congress, believe it or not, did not pass a budget. And I find that in and of itself irresponsible. But they're gone, or most of them, or at least 60 or 70 of them are no longer there because of their rather disdain for not listening to the people. So they were voted out of office, and now the Republicans control the House as opposed to the Democrats. But the last Congress did not pass the fiscal year 2011 budget. As a result, what the Congress are doing right now is passing continuing resolutions. And what that does is it's not the entire budget bill. It's just funding enough money to keep the government going. But the debate is about how much, and for those not familiar with the fiscal year, the fiscal year 2011, for example, started 1 October of last year, 2010. And it ends September 30th, 2011. So we're already, you know, you do the math. We're already 5 months going on 6 months into it. You know, October, November, December, January, February. We're about almost at 5.5 months already into the fiscal year. We don't have a budget. And you're supposed to have a budget be prior to the start of the fiscal year. And they didn't even forward one. And like I said, that I don't care if you're Democrat or Republican. If you're a citizen of the country, that should burn you. Now, occasionally they get late into it, but not even to propose. And the reason why they did it was strictly politics. They didn't want to expose it because they would have been criticized for it, and rightly. The budget that they're working on now is over $3,800 billion. That is a lot of money. And what we're arguing about, or what the Republicans or Democrats are arguing about, is to what extent that the remaining 6.5 months, how much can be cut from that. So we have that going on. In addition, and I'll get back to that in a second. In addition, we have there's a process going. The president in Valentine's Day, and if you listen to a previous show, I went over this. The president, I believe it's the first Monday of February, has to submit his proposed budget for fiscal year 2012. That's the one that actually starts 1 October of this year and then goes through September of 2012. And he did, and he proposed in round numbers a budget of slightly less than the previous year of roughly $3,700 billion. I want to get you to the ballpark and get used to the numbers because this show will have a lot of numbers, but I'm trying to keep it simple. I'm not trying to be precise. I could be precise. That's what the website is for. That complements this program. And for those at a computer, that's prompt pops.wordpress.com. And usually I have articles, charts, graphs, videos that are embedded on the page. And for this show, I have two pages, segment one and two. I'll be covering segment one first, segment two second. So I'll be doing the unemployment towards the end of the show, the budgetary story I'm doing now. But I wanted to give you some of the key things that are going on, and they're very, very, very much related. Related to, so they're preparing the House Budget Committee and the Appropriation Committee on the process of preparing a budget for fiscal year 2012. And so the Senate has to do the same thing. And, you know, they look at the president's budget. But if you recall what I said and wrote on that blog, I think it's DOA, dead on arrival, because it's so out of whack with revenues that it's not serious. It's almost laughable. I think it borders on delusional. And the reason why I say that, to propose a $3,700 billion budget when the revenue, tax revenues from, I'm talking all the tax revenues, are estimated to be, I mean, the president's own estimate is, I believe it's $2,600 billion. I'm using round numbers just so you keep it straight in your head. And they're actually running revenues. There's a Treasury report that comes out every month that shows what the tax revenues were, what the government took in income or taxes, and what it spent. And you know, you can go online. It's a monthly Treasury report that has that. And if you look at the numbers, the tax collections are running on an annual basis roughly between $2,000 to $2,500 billion. And if you look, and I hope it goes up, and so does the government, it's really running at a rate of around $2,100 billion. So that's way short, folks. You're proposing to spend over $3,700 billion, and you're only taking in maybe, at best, $2,500. You're immediately saying you have a deficit. And the president estimated deficit was over $1,600 billion, and that's for the upcoming fiscal year. So that's why I say it's dead on arrival. The Republicans will cut that, or be significantly less. But I don't think they're really up to. I hope I'm wrong, but I don't think they're up to the job. And I'll get to that in a moment, but. And I think I'll back that up, because they're not talking the cuts required, the magnitude of the cuts required to get to a balanced budget. And both the Republicans or Democrats are playing the game. And I'll repeat this now, but I want to highlight it now. Instead of talking how much they want to cut in a specific year, what both parties are doing, both President Obama and the people in the Congress and the Senate, they talk in terms of either 5 years or 10 years. I want to, for example, and this is almost verbatim from President Obama, in 10 years we will cut the deficit by $400 billion. Well, that sounds like a big number. He almost thinks you're too stupid enough to divide by 10 at least, okay? Well, $400 billion over 10 years is $40 billion. $40 billion, and you're proposing over $3,700 billion, and that's all you can cut? Give me a break, Mr. President, and add insult to injury over the complete 10-year period. It doesn't balance the budget for 1 year, not 1 year. Their deficit as far as the eye can see. This is not a serious person. This is not a person in touch with economic reality. And that's why I think he's a one-term president. Now, I don't think he's going to be easy. Actually, I do think he's going to be easy to beat if the Republicans come up with a halfway decent an articulate candidate and not another progressive Republican or, you know, one of these middle-of-the-roaders that they talk the conservative line, but they keep up sucking up to the press, and really they're progressives, but they're Republican kind of progressives, and that's what I considered McCain to be. He's just another big government type, and unfortunately Washington is jam packed of them, and the Democratic Party has them, and certainly the Republican Party has them, and that's the problem. So in addition to the fiscal 2011 continuing resolution that being negotiated, you will have, and this is an ongoing process, you will have over the next coming months until the sometimes they go even in October. I think they're trying to do it in an orderly way. You will have what happens is the House will have to come up with a number, or it's more than one number. It's for various departments as to what their total outlays will be. Then the Senate does the same thing. They both pass bills, and it has to go. They have to be reconciled. Once that happens, and remember, the Senate is controlled by the Democrats. So once, if they can reconcile, then they have a bill, and it's sent to the president for his signature, which he may or may not sign. And I'm not optimistic on this process. For two reasons. I don't think either political party has the will, the vision, the courage to really do what needs to be done. And that's what I'm going to be getting into in this show, what I mean by that. Because if you're proposing outlays of over $3,700 billion and you're only bringing in less than $2,500 billion, you got a problem related to your own family budget. Let's say you're spending $5,000 and only earning $1,000. Well, I can't go on very long. Yeah, you can run up and pay the bills by credit card for a while, but this is the third year that President Obama, and this is his third budget year, has run up deficits of over $1,000 billion. And I know some of you say, well, let me just review. There are three ways to pay for government spending. One is taxes. And usually, under normal situation, ideally, you would like to pay all of your spending through taxes. And even prior to this, frankly, administration, and to a certain extent, the Bush administration, most presidents, about 85% to 90% or higher, would be paid through taxes. The rest would be paid by running debt, by basically issuing treasury securities or debt to pay for the shortage or the deficit. So, with few exceptions, we're going to have the presidents, you know, over the last 50 years, we've had, not counting Social Security, 4 or 5 years of where we actually had a so-called surplus. So where tax revenues exceed the outlays, that's a surplus. The normal situation is the spending or outlays significantly exceed the tax revenues. That's a deficit. And we have a president that's broken all records. I mean, unprecedented in terms of the deficits he's running. Now, I'll be a little bit fair to him, but he's going to do this. And he blames everything on Bush. He's been president for 2 years, and he's still blaming Bush. I'm sure when he runs again in 2012, he's going to blame it on Bush. Yet he's the one that's proposing these budgets. He's been now president for 2 years. He's going to have two more. And it's time to step up to the plate and take some responsibility. The American people are not going to buy, it's all Bush's fault. Now, President Obama will try to blame it on him. But good luck. I don't think it's going to work. And I will point out, He has been reckless cavalier with his budgets. Most of it are to pay back his supporters, primarily in labor. And you can go online and look at the statistics. What departments have had the biggest increases? It is mainly Department of Labor, the Department of Education, Department of Transportation. Remember, you have unions in the car industry. It's not very hard to just look for the big increases, and you can follow the trail right back to his supporters. So, we had a stimulus package that was supposedly going to get the unemployment rate below 8%. Actually, we were told by now it should be under 7, and we're still slightly under 9, and they're playing games with that. But it's been his economic policies have been a failure, and I'll get into that a little bit more in a minute. Now, in addition to the two budgetary stories, and I'll develop this, how they relate, there's something called the national debt, and that's the accumulation of all the deficits, if you will, year by year, and it's accumulating, and it has been growing. Of all the debt that the United States has issued. Now, they're constantly rolling it over. But right now, there's a ceiling on it. And it's, I don't have it in front of me, but it's over. I'm trying to get it. Excuse me. Okay. About had a heart attack. My computer screen, which is not conveniently placed. As a matter of fact, it's way over to the right of where I am instead of being in front of me. And someday I hope to correct that because it's really a problem, especially when you have a show today that's number oriented. You have a debt ceiling. I forget the exact number. I believe it's 14,500, this is a round number, it's approximate, $14,500 billion. I don't know the exact number. That's a very, very, very big number. And that's part of the problem. They're about ready. They should hit that probably early May. So if they, what the government is doing, instead of pay as you go, basically paying the outlays out of taxes, they've run up debts. And instead of the normal 85 to 90% being paid out of taxes, today it's more like 60% or less of the expenditures or outlays are paid by taxes, and the remainder is paid by going into debt, running up debt. Now, except for World War II, that again is unprecedented. That's way out of line. But and I want you to understand why is this happening, and it relates to our second segment. The reason why, the primary reason why the government, both on the national, state, city, and county level, has this problem is high rates of unemployment. When you have high rates of unemployment, people are not. Well, they're not earning an income, which means they're not paying Social Security taxes. They're not paying income taxes. They're not paying sales taxes. They're holding their money close. So your tax, what the governments call tax revenues, are way, way, way down. And that's why, for example, at Richland College, they've had a series of cuts from the state. They have budgetary cuts. Because the states are not getting the money, and if the states don't have the money, they can't fund education to the degree that in the past when the economy was booming, they can't fund it as much as they would like. So everyone is having to look at their budgets, their staffing, what they're spending money on, and we've already had layoffs, for example, at Richland College, and you're having layoffs in other parts of government, or you have what's called furlough days. For example, I periodically use the Dallas Library. Well, several times I've showed up on a Friday, and you get a little sign that says, well, this is a furlough day. So the workers, instead of firing the workers, they don't work Friday. They don't get paid Friday either. It's one of their days where, so you get cutbacks in services. Well, this is happening throughout the country, governments have been effective and been impacted, and as a result, services have you had less service, or, for example, if you're a student, the tuition at community college has gone up. I can remember, well, I don't want to maybe date myself, but you, for a three-credit course, you might pay $67, $75 tops for 3 credits. I know that seems very little, especially if you're going to a private university where the per-credit course is like $400 or $500 a credit. But at one time, not too distant future, that's what you would pay. Today, it's about, I think it's $48 a credit. So you can do the math. And that's the recent one. It's probably going to go up to $50 soon. So almost double what in a not too distant future you could have paid for, you could have paid for a three-credit course. The reason why that's important, the community college system is a way for students that simply don't have the money to get 2 years of education, get your basic courses out of the way, stay at home, so you keep your expenses down. Is primarily it's almost entirely the students are commuters. They they go through their freshman and sophomore year, and then in their junior or senior year they transfer to a so-called senior university. For example, we have several, like the University of Texas at Dallas, the University of Texas at Arlington, or SMU or TCU. We have a number of colleges in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. But that's a way for families and students to save money and not have to go into debt to the extent that they would have had to go into debt if they were to attend a four-year college. And especially because it's local, you can live at home. Now, I remember when I was going through colleges, that wasn't the situation. I wasn't living at home. I was living in either in a dorm or fraternity house on campus. And it was a private university, well thought of university. And it was expensive. And it was in New York City, so I think you can guess it was New York University. And this was the uptown campus, when they had an uptown campus at University Heights. And it was it was expensive then, but not like it is today, where tuition, I say $400 to $500 a credit. Sometimes it's even more than that. And then you have books that are very expensive. So people have to cut back. If your parents, if one or more of your parents are unemployed, or even if you had a job and you lost it, in this kind of situation where unemployment. We have over 30 million Americans being unemployed. The impact is not just to them. It's also to the institutions like colleges, but also many of your community. Well, the community college system is it's a government school. So it relies on funding or financing from both the state and local community, as well as the students paying tuition. So when you're in a recession, those revenues are down and they're impacted. So everyone is having to look, tighten a belt, look over their budgets, and that's happening on the national level. But it's somewhat unreal when you start looking at the numbers. I said this, I believe, last week or the previous show. You know, my experience, I used to be in financial planning, but I also, when I was in the Air Force, prepared budgets for a weapon, a fighter, F-15 fighter program. So I'm very comfortable with numbers, planning, looking at the numbers, and you know, I'm not intimidated. I really dig behind it. And a starting point, especially for an individual or family, and I'm trying to relate it to you, you have to look at, well, what's my revenue? What's my income? What's coming in every month? That should be the starting point. Not what I want. We all have wants that are infinite. You know, I want a lot of things, but I can afford very few things in relation to my wants. So the starting point, as far as I'm concerned, should be, you know, how much money do I have coming in from whatever source, whether it's a job, your family, wherever you're getting your investments, wherever your money's coming through, and that's the starting point for any budget. And it's the same thing, for example, at Richland College. They have they have estimates of how many students they're going to have, how many courses students are going to enroll in, and how much they're going to pay. They have a good idea. Somebody in the college, both at the district and locally, is doing that. And there's also some money comes in from the state. Some money comes in from grants, for example. Some from the federal government, for example, Department of Education. But that's what you have to do. Your starting point should be an estimate of your revenues. And based on that, you can determine, well, what can we you have certain bills to pay. It could be, you know, obviously you need electricity. You need janitorial services. You need instructors. You need a certain amount of administrators. Although I was reading the newspaper, it seems that we have an awful lot of administrators and support people at the DCCD. I was reading an editorial prepared by the managing editor of the Richland College Chronicles. And he came to the same conclusion I did. I've read several stories on this. We have a lot of chiefs, and what our chiefs mean, what I mean by chiefs is, as opposed to Indians, we have for every 10 faculty, the number that was, and again, I have not studied this, but I'm just taking it face value. There were 7 administrators and or support people for every 10 actual faculty instructors. And that's awful high. That's almost 1-to-1. And that is out of line with some, with other community colleges in Texas, and I'm sure across the nation. Now, keep in mind, and what's quickly pointed out, Richland College, like there are a number of colleges in the DCCD district, and they're somewhat autonomous. They stand on their own. So you're going to have a certain amount of duplication. And I understand that, but even my common sense says, I think it's a little out of whack. I think that budget needs to be scrubbed. And the point of the editorial was what they, you know, they're looking, like I said, this is not the first time that they've looked at the personnel situation. And this time they were proposing, I believe they passed a reduction in the actual salaries of what faculty get paid. And as opposed to, I guess, and I hate to say this because I'm not as informed on this to hazard this. I think I would have looked at before I would have done something like that. I'm not saying I wouldn't have done that, but I would have looked at the administration. I'd look at the headcount for the administrators and support staff. What in business is called the overhead or G&A, your general administration costs, because let's face it, you need faculty and good faculty to teach the students. Didn't surprise me, and I believe I'm correct on this. I'm just, again, I'm reading from the papers. I thought the faculty here taught 3 courses. It turns out a full-time faculty only teaches 2 courses. Now, some of these are very, very large sections, so I don't want to misjudge people, but I think I know in the business world what happens in a time recession like this. Yes, people are laid off, but the people remaining, and this is where it gets stressful, are doing other people's jobs. It's not unusual where you might be doing two or three people's jobs. I mean, that's the nature of the beast. If you want to work here, fine. You're a very good worker. You're going to have to do not only your job, but Sally's job, because Sally was laid off. And I've talked to, got to be careful here, at least one of the administrators, we'll put it in those terms, that, you know, works at Richland College. And the person was telling me that this person was doing two or three jobs, not only her job, but two or three other jobs. And I've heard that from more than one person. So, that is normal. That's what happens in the private sector. And that's why productivity goes up. You're doing more with the less is a phrase you'll hear. And that's what businesses have to do. That's what governments have to do. And that's what colleges have to do. And when you're preparing a budget, you should start with the revenues. How much money do we have? And then if you're spending too much, you're going to have to make those hard decisions, and they're not easy decisions, to what's called a RIF, a reduction in force. And like, for example, in higher education, what they're thinking of, well, not thinking, they're doing, they're trying to get people to retire because they can net, they can have a savings from that. Basically provide some incentive package to retire early and then go to, and this is the trend, although this is a hot button with me, actually a very sore point with me, go to an adjunct faculty, because adjunct faculty are cheaper. The dirty little secret about higher education, besides the inflation that's going on, most of your universities, from the smallest to the largest, would have to shut down if they did not have so-called adjunct faculty, part-time faculty. Think about that for a minute. And the reason is very, very, very simple. Your adjunct faculty usually do not get any benefits, no retirement benefits, no medical benefits. Now, I know for some people, they love it. You know, they have another job where it's full time and they like to teach, and they teach typically one, no more than two courses. They're limited in terms of the hours, and it's usually in the evening. And I've had some outstanding instructors, for example, at Richland College that fall in that category. But the majority, not but, the fact is the majority of the faculty in the DCCD are part-timers. And that's a conscious decision. And I think, though, that a number of people are taken advantage of. I know a number of adjunct faculty that would love to be full-time faculty, but can't, because that's the decision that the DCCD has made, and it's passed on to Richland College, that the way they're going to cut costs is to limit the number of full-time faculty. And I think why I've had generally a positive experience, I can see, I've been to a number of, well, very good schools, both public school and on the university level, on the graduate level. I have several master's degrees, for example, from outstanding colleges. But most of them were full-time faculty, especially your research institutions. That doesn't mean they're better instructors, because like I said in last program, especially at a research institution, which most of your graduate schools are, the way you get tenure is to write papers. That's the name of the game. You got to, you know, it's publish or perish. And teaching is unfortunately not rewarded, which means I've had some people that were names in their field that unfortunately were terrible instructors. I will also say I've had some people that were names in their field that were outstanding instructors. It's hard to generalize. But so on your senior institutions, you have more full-time faculty, but you still they still use part-time faculty, and they also use graduate students. I remember when I was a grad student, I was a reader, which basically grades papers. If you thought the instructor graded all your exams and your papers, I have news for you. In most institutions, that's not the case. Now, the instructors would look them over, but I was grading the papers. I've also been a teaching assistant. You know, I've taught sections economics, all economics. And to a certain extent, I think the parents that are paying big bucks would like that impressive professor to teach the course. Well, usually to the extent that they do, it's usually a very, very, very large class, okay? The smaller classes are for the graduate students. I mean, that's just the name of the game. So even though you might have an impressive faculty, you know, it's a name school, impressive faculty, the actual students, your undergraduates, a lot of that work is done by part-time faculty and graduate students, and that's the way they make the money. Anyway, even today they are hard pressed. They're cutting back. They're laying off early retirement for people. I've kind of got a little bit digressed, but I needed to set the stage, you know, to make it personal. You know, how would you go about budgeting? And I think, unfortunately, our Congress and Senate and our president have it backwards. I'm going to clean that up, have it really backwards. Instead of asking what's the estimate of our tax revenues, and based on that, come up with the budget, they don't do that. It's what do we like? You know, what are we spending now, and how much more can we spend? How bad is it? And it is really bad. We have a president that is for example, the fiscal year 2011 budget was $3,800 billion. His 12 budget is $3,700 billion. Okay, a slight decline from the previous year. Our revenues are running $2,100 billion. From the get-go, from the start, you've built in over $1,000 billion deficit. I consider that fiscally irresponsible. I don't care if you're a Democrat or a Republican. You can't keep doing that. Because it is going to hit the fan. It's going to hit the fan faster than, unfortunately, I think the president, senators, and congressmen understand. There are a few that do, but most don't. And how bad is it? You know what? And this, when the light bulb went on, I sort of knew this. The light bulb went on. There, kind of two light bulbs went on. I was listening to strictly by accident. One of the talk radio shows that I normally don't listen to. And he had a Republican congressman from the House. I didn't pick up his name. But it's someone, he's not new. He's been on the committee. I think he's head of this subcommittee. And the gentleman was asking him somewhat pointed questions. And the congressman, remember, this is a Republican, he wasn't completely dodging the question, but he wasn't answering it. But he gave me some insight. They're not talking about, if you think either the Republican or Democratic Party are trying to balance the budget, you're sadly mistaken. What they're talking about is in the 10-year budget cycle that they look out, they may in one of those out years budget it. And I just before the show, I looked at Drudge Report to see if anything news, and one of the Democratic, one of the leaders of the Democratic, he's the House Minority, I think he's the whip, Hoyer, Dennis Hoyer. He says, well, we might be able to balance in somewhere in between 10 and 20 years from now. They don't understand. They're not going to be able to do that. The House is going to crash. You know, if that's what they're serious and okay, that was the one point. They're not talking about balancing it this year, next year, or 3 years from now, or even 5 years from now. Maybe in the 10-year window we will balance it. And the most responsible ones are talking maybe 5 years we'll balance it. Maybe. You see the game they're playing? Now, that gave me some insight. There's no, absolutely no motivation, no desire, no attempt to even come close within the next 3 to 4 years. They think we can keep on doing, we can keep on issuing that debt. I have a news flash. They better start paying attention. I have a number of videos, but the one gentleman I really respect, looked up to, and always tune in. It's Peter Schiff. He manages Euro Pacific Capital Management, I think is the name of this firm. And he pointed out something I was aware of, but I wasn't sure what the number was, and he was really citing somebody else. And he was making a point that the Treasury in February spent over $1,000 billion. That's a lot of money. Now, what they were doing is paying off old debt and then refunding it with new debt. Now, what was interesting, the gentleman that he was quoting, you know, he's quoting from an article, was pointing out that about 70%, now, where did the new debt come from? What they're doing is they have to pay, as Treasury bills, bonds, and notes mature, they have to pay back the principal and the last interest payment. And that's done every week. Now, to get the money, they have to issue new Treasury bills, notes, or bonds, securities, debt, if you will. Well, who is investing in it? Who's paying for it? Who would invest in such, especially Treasury bills, where there's hardly any return? Well, it's the Federal Reserve. They're printing money, about 70%. Is being bought by the Federal Reserve, and I haven't had time to check this out, and about another 30% by central banks abroad. What he's saying is fewer and fewer private individuals are rolling over their for example, I'm a private individual, or it's usually a financial institution. When the security matures, they're not investing in treasuries because the return and the risk is risk premium is not there. So they're finding it increasingly more difficult, and I didn't say impossible, to roll it over to private individuals or financial institutions to fund it. So what's happening? The Federal Reserve, the central bank of the United States, is printing money, or creating money. Printing's the wrong word. They create money. What they do is they give the Treasury. It's done electronically. They don't print money, but they give it a credit so that they can pay off the debt, and in exchange they get a Treasury security. We're in that, and that's what's called monetizing the debt, and what that means, they're debasing the U.S. currency, which inevitably leads to inflation. Some people are even predicting hyperinflation, which means your money is worth less and less, because when this happens, you have more money chasing It's almost a cliche in economics. You have more money chasing the same goods, so what happens? The price goes up. If you do your shopping and I do it, I've seen it. I've seen peanut butter go up. I told you I had lunch of peanut butter. I've seen that go up. I look for sales. I've seen the size of my, I like cereal, the size of, not the box, the bag has gotten smaller from 32-ounce bag to a 28-ounce bag. And you've seen this in chalk, anything you eat, instead of raising the prices, one of the first things they do is they shrink the package, or they shrink the number sometimes they don't shrink the package, they shrink how much is in the package. And that's what's going on. But and that's the third way. There's, like I said, I told you early on, there's three ways that the government pays for what it's spending. One is taxes. And now, roughly on average, only about 60% of outlays are covered by taxes. The remaining, up until now, has been covered by debt. And the third way is debasing the currency, or printing money, or creating money. And that's not good, folks, because that means inflation for everything in the future. And we're starting to see it for different reasons in gasoline and food, but it's a conscious policy. Ben Bernanke, the Federal Reserve Chairman, he has two primary responsibilities. One is price stability. And second is, and I think this is a mistake when Congress did this, gave them two goals. One, make sure the purchasing power, the best they can, is stable. In other words, you don't have inflation. Or if you do, it's, 1% or 2%, not more than that. But the second goal is to maximize employment. And what he's doing, and I've had a separate show, and I won't get into this, is quantitative easing. He is actively trying to keep the yield, or the interest that the government pays on its long-term bonds, down by being an active buyer of those bonds. Now that's the cover story, and I'll come back to this later. Couple of weeks, couple of months from now, because I've already did a story on that, but our radio show on that. That's the cover story. But what I'm suspecting, and it's being confirmed by Peter Schiff and others, what they're really doing is they're financing the shortfall. In other words, fewer and fewer private investors are buying our treasury bonds. Now, there's still a market, but they're especially the short-term ones. And that's the third way, and that is something that shouldn't be done. And that Chairman Ben Bernanke has been asked about. He denies it, but I've listened to his explanation. He's not really denying it. He says, "Well, at any time in the future, I can suck back. I can basically reverse this policy." Well, he can. The question is, can he do it in time before inflation takes hold? And a number of wiser economists than me said, this is a very, very, very dangerous game. I think it's irresponsible. I think it's playing with fire, assuming he knows what he's doing. And I'm not impressed with fancy degrees from Princeton or Harvard. Or I think he went to Harvard or MIT, one of the two, and taught at Princeton. There are a lot of very intelligent people, but their wisdom, let's say, leaves much to be desired. And I'm not the only one criticizing Ben Bernanke. I think what he's doing is very, very risky. And we're about – but I sort of digressed a little bit, and I hope I didn't lose you. The point that really – the first wake-up call was they're not talking about balancing the budget anytime soon. Between 5 and 10 years, they haven't gotten it yet. They don't understand what dire straits the U.S. economy is in. Second of all, and this is the this when the second light went on. Actually, there are three lights. And I knew they were playing that game. You know, when they start using big numbers like 400 or 500 billion cuts, listen real closely. They don't say that in a year. It's over 10 years or over 20 years. Okay? It might not be 10. That's the first game they play. The second is when you actually we're not going to touch any mandatory expenditures and that's mainly entitlements. Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid are the primary drivers there. Well, that's over half of the outlays are there. We're not going to touch defense. So after it's off the table, it's off the table, it's off the table. When you play that game, what's left is less than 20%, the so-called discretionary spending. And you see the game they're playing? They're dividing it up. It's divide and conquer. Because they're only talking discretionary spending, what are they arguing about? The Republicans, at least initially, said they were going to cut $100 billion. That was the number that everyone heard from the fiscal year 2011 budget. I think they're now down to about $60 billion, and Obama's at $40 billion. Now, that's a big number, but not when you compare it to the total. The total budget for fiscal year 2011 is over $3,800 billion. This is less than 3%. This is nowhere, and you do the math, at this rate, it would take you 10 or 20 years to balance it. Assuming you froze it. Are you following with me? This is not serious. And then the second point neither party wants to really reform entitlements. Where the big bucks are is not in the discretionary spending, although I think they should start there first. And if you follow this show, what I recommend is that they close the whole departments. I have a list. I have a list of 10 departments. Better way to say it, I think we definitely should have a Department of Defense, State, Treasury, Justice, and maybe Homeland Security, but I question that. And that's it. The rest, gone. And that's what you need to do. Believe me, nobody's talking about that, except Ron Paul. I think he has eight or nine. And the reason is, according to the Constitution, we shouldn't have these departments. And that's part of the problem. We have a major imbalance. We are in a major recession that's turning into a depression. And they're arguing on the margin. They need to be cutting entitlement programs. Or reforming it, if you like that as a better word. They need to be shutting down entire departments. They need to be cutting defense expenditures, because those are where the bucks are. There's no way you can get from here to there. And the only congressman that has been consistent, I'm sure there are a few others, is Ron Paul. And the only senator that even has a clue as to what needs to be done is a senator. His son is Rand Paul. Now, he came up with a proposal that has very, very few supporters of a $500 billion cut. Now, that gets my attention. But that won't balance it. If you want to balance the budget in the next the next three budgets, including fiscal year 2011, you need to be over $1,000 billion cuts. And that's what you need to do to get the economy back on a growth path, and nobody's talking about it. Now, I've sort of digressed, unfortunately, on this. I'm only going to be covering segment one. I sort of indirectly planned on this because I did touch, at least highlighted, what happened with the unemployment. And the reason why I emphasize this, until the federal government gets serious, and serious I mean balance the budget, the sooner the better, and the sooner I mean I'm trying to be realistic. You have to have within 3 years a balanced budget, not 5, 10, or 15, or 20. I understand you can't do it all in 1 year, but when you're talking 40 or 50 billion, when you need to be talking over 1,000 billion, you're not serious. I don't care if you're a Republican, Democrat, or socialist. And you need to do that because we have over 30 million people that are seeking a full-time job. And the reason why they're not being able to find a job is the government is sucking resources out of the entire nation and is going on a spending binge that's irresponsible. Next time I will cover the unemployment situation. It's getting slightly better, but it's the way I like to say it, we're kind of staggering along. There's a little bit of good news, and I'll cover it on our next show. The time is 5 o'clock. You are listening to KDUC Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas. We are the voice of Richland College. My name is Raymond Pronk. You've been listening to the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of anyone at KDUC's Richland College or the DCCD. Back to the music, and please join us next Tuesday at 4 o'clock. Thank you. Have a great day.